Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we've been talking a lot about different things going on in this world. And, you know, there's some crazy, crazy things happening. And one of the crazy things I've seen lately is a lot of dogs biting people, and especially biting kids and even young adults in the face. I want to talk about that because remember when you get a dog or you're working with a dog, a lot of times dogs think that that's a challenge. So if you're putting your face or a child is putting his or her face into the face of a dog, and especially those people who blow into the dog's face or they hold on to the jowls of a boxer or a pit or a Rottie or a Mastiff, and they hold on to the face, which is a challenge, right? That would be like you pulling on somebody. And then they growl or they blow air or they go, whew, and they like make a dumb noise. And I look and I say, why are you doing that? What would you do if you had some big 250 pounds or 300 pound linebacker? Would you hold his cheeks and go, whew, or growl at him or blow air in his face? You wouldn't do it in a million years. Well, why do we do that? Why do kids do that? Well, because we don't teach everyone right. Now, granted, sometimes there's a special needs child or somebody who's really not very bright. But, you know, even a special needs child, you can teach them and you supervise. And that's where you don't let your 20-year-old who has a behavioral issue and might be autistic, or your 5-year-old who might not be autistic, with an animal unsupervised when you don't know how that person is going to act. I always have a phrase, I say, I don't trust kids around dogs. I used to say, I don't trust kids around horses. I don't trust kids around animals unless they are very mature and you have consistently seen that that child or that person is very good and doesn't take stupid chances or doesn't do things that are really creating something in the dog that they don't realize. Now, how many times do dogs bite children in the face? Well, I don't know. I had 13 phone calls in about a 10-day period. Today, I got 3 separate calls. One was from a lab. Not the dog, actually. I wish the dogs could call me. If they had opposable thumbs and cell phones, that would be great. But this lovely lady called me, and she has a chocolate lab, which is definitely one of those that, you know, the labs are great dogs, and every dog is breed has got great dogs, but some of the chocolates seem to have a little bit more sketchy temperament. Not that all of them, but, you know, I'm a behaviorist, so I'm talking from a behaviorist point of view of having fixed 26, 25, I don't even know how many thousands of dogs, but somewhere over 25,000 dogs with behavioral issues. I also had somebody with a mixed breed, they don't even have a clue of what it is, who bit a 5-year-old. And another person, the other person who got bitten was, I believe, 12 or 13, a young teen. Now, what did all 3 have in common? The parents heard the scream from the other room. Okay, well, that means that the dog wasn't supervised. One of them is a special needs child. I understand that. I totally get it. Special needs kids can have some pretty funky energy. It doesn't mean that it's a bad energy. It just can be intimidating to a puppy or to a dog that you really don't know. Now, how long does it take for you to get your dog where you kind of say, wow, you know, I kind of know the dog? Not a day, not a week, not a month, probably more like 6 months to a year till you really, really know what that dog is thinking. Now, if it's a puppy, sometimes it can be a lot less, sometimes it can be a lot more. But remembering that every single day for the first, basically, in and out of 14 months of a puppy or dog's life, the dog is going through different behavioral stages. They're going through stages of development from the time they're born. So initially, they're using their nose, and they're trying to find mama by their nose. And they are just those little squirmy things that, well, Rhodesian Ridgeback, when they're born for the first few weeks, kind of look like fat chipmunks. They're really, really funny looking. You'd never know what they were if you found them and if you didn't know exactly what it was. Now, the first 2 weeks of a puppy's life is when you want to get the puppy handled, if you have that option, and get that puppy used to being touched, but not being too rough, and touching ears and touching noses and touching toes and pretending you're doing nail clippers, but you're really not, obviously. Touching them, taking your fingertips and just very gently touching the tips of the puppy's toes. Things like that that are going to translate later on into a wonderful, wonderful puppy, because the puppy is going to be so well, you know, well adjusted to having its body parts touched. Now, the next thing that happens at about 10 to 13 days of age, the puppy's eyes open. So now the puppy is able to see the world around it. And we say, oh, yeah, well, of course, and now he can see. But what I do when they hit about that 12 to 13, 14-day period, and now their eyes are starting to open, remembering that they can't see super well. I mean, their eyes open, you know, but it does take a little while, at least a few days or a week or so, sometimes for their eyesight to adjust and for them to be able to understand and process. Now, occasionally, there will be a puppy who has a blind eye, or there will be a puppy who has some kind of a genetic issue or a physical issue. And that might be the kind of puppy that you're going to have to do a little extra work with. But you should start seeing a little bit of a personality once their eyes open, because now they can see and they can look for things. The day that their eyes open, I take every puppy and I just gently hold them up really carefully upright to my nose and mouth, and I just start kissing them. I just kiss their little noses because I love puppy breath. And I kiss their little noses and kiss them and kiss them and kiss them, and almost to the point of driving them crazy, but they're little and they don't care. I mean, they have nothing. They can't do anything anyway. But what's great about that is that once their eyes open, you can start working to help them to understand that any face that ever comes towards them, any face of any person that ever comes toward them, should not be bitten but kissed. And I keep kissing and kissing and kissing and kissing the puppy's face until the puppy finally licks me. And when the puppy licks me, then I put that puppy down and I go on to puppy number two. And I do that and over and over and over and over again until the puppy licks me. And then I go to the number three and so on. Now, why do I do that? And why do I literally sleep in the whelping box for a month at least after, sometimes 6 or 8 weeks even? Because I don't want mama to crush the puppies. And I also want to make sure that mama's doing a good job, because I don't want to leave that puppy unattended. Now, fast forward to a year or 2 or 5 years later, and you've had that puppy who's been properly brought up by a licensed, reputable breeder, or by a show breeder, which sometimes they call hobby breeders, because those are the people like myself who really care that your puppy is going to be socialized. So now, let's say that you buy the puppy from a legitimate breeder, a good breeder of purebred dogs, and the person is showing and doing the right things and doing all the genetic testing. The chances that that puppy will ever bite somebody in the face or bite somebody at all are pretty close to none. I'd say, like, you know, the tiniest percentage that you could say where it would still register. Because those dogs understand from the moment they were born, the moment they could still first see a human, that we never, ever, ever bite. That the first reflex of that puppy as it grows up and as it gets older is to kiss or lick, not to bite. So that is my little tried and true trick that's worked for 28, 29 years of breeding Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks and Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks and AKCA's award-winning Ridgebacks and Westminster winning and Yukonuba Championship winning. That's what I do. I'm going to give you some more helpful hints in the next segment on puppies that are a little older. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial. No sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 33955. Put your pet on the path to good health.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo. Healthy.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we're talking about developmental stages of puppies and how that early impact can impact that dog as it grows older into its adulthood and even into its senior year. Talking about putting your face near the puppy when it's tiny. Now, even if you're getting a puppy who's very, very young, and I wouldn't do this the very first day, start getting the puppy used to being kissed and having, not annoyingly, but having the puppy be very, very used to having humans with their faces near the puppy's face. You can make little noises. You can make little silly movements. You can breathe heavily on them. You can even blow into their noses. Now, what my dogs do, if you blow into their, well, if you did it, hopefully they would be smart enough to get out of your personal space and say, hey, Mommy, there's a nutty person here. I don't want him breathing into my face. But my dogs wouldn't do anything. They would just be, if anything, they would just, you know, let you do whatever you were doing. They would never think of biting anybody. Well, the reason that sometimes we have problems with people or with dogs is because people and dogs are different species. And as I joke all the time, but it's kind of true, men and women, we're almost the same species, and we don't understand each other. So if you can imagine for a moment, and I had a really fun class today where it was a dog who was, there are two dogs of the same breed, they're starting to get into it a little bit rough, and they're getting very dog aggressive. Well, the lady's awesome. What a nice, nice person. So we were talking a little bit about it, and what happens is when somebody gets really, really close to the dog's face, whether it's a dog or a human, the dog snaps. And it doesn't snap to kill somebody, but it snaps at that face. That's a really dangerous situation, and these are two pretty large dogs. So if the breeder, although these are rescue dogs, but if the breeder had done what I do and what I teach people to do, that would never happen because it becomes so ingrained in the animal from the time it's tiny that it just never even turns into anything because, of course, the dog is, you know, assuming that, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. So fast forward. You have the puppy who is trained and is very, very early on exposed to having people's faces in their face and kissing them and all that until they lick. So now that puppy grows up and a toddler comes up and grabs their face. And as the toddler grabs the dog's face, what happens? The dog either licks them or walks away. That's a much better outcome than what happens to many people that I speak with, which is, oh, well, you know, the dog doesn't seem to mind it. Well, guess what? When a person or of any size falls onto a dog when it's lying down or sitting and you're allowing that, it's partly your fault. And I don't mean to blame anybody, but it is. The same way you wouldn't leave a toddler alone or a newborn or an infant, you wouldn't leave alone. Because if you left that child alone and something happened, there could be a fire. There could be, you know, toxic chemicals. There could be, you know, something falling. The child could grab something, reach for something that you didn't see. Child could fall into a swimming pool. A child could fall into the toilet head first. I've heard of that, and it's horrible because the kids can't get out. They don't have the muscle control and gross and fine motor skills at that age. Well, same thing with puppies. So when the puppy can't do a whole lot, which is really the first, 14 to 16 weeks, where they're really kind of uncoordinated, that's when you want to practice all that. You want to practice. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to stick your face into an aggressive puppy's face. But what it means is get that space bubble that we talk about and close that space bubble so that you can invade that puppy's space or that dog's space. And then you go, whoever the strongest in the pack or in the family is the first to do it and set the rules, and then the second, and then the third, and then the fourth, and so on and so on. But the baby or the youngest child or the person or child who has the weakest energy, that person is going to be the one who starts the problem, because the dog is normally a fearful dog will start from bottom up, and a dominant dog will start from top down. So if you have a puppy and you're working with this puppy and you see this puppy is trying to bite faces, well, it could be from fear or it could be from dominance. Dogs do things only because of fear or dominance. It's the only two things that make a dog react. Does a dog love you and does it do things out of love? Yes, but those aren't the reasons that you are all listening to me today. The reason you're listening is you want to learn more about how to fix the dogs that have behavioral issues. So let's talk about that. Let's go backward now. 10 to 14 days, we know what we're doing from that point on. So at 10 days to 13, 14 days, their eyes open. We gently put our faces near them and give them kisses until they lick us. Then we go to the next puppy and the next and the next. After that, and this is great for all you shelter and rescue volunteers, because you know when you get a pregnant bitch in and you say, oh no, you know, what are we going to do and we need a foster? These are important things, and you can contact me or contact any of our amazing United Canine professional people around the country and around 10 new countries. Well, we have 8 old and 2 new, possibly a third new one. So, you know, what we're looking to do is to educate the shelter and rescue people, because when you get a pregnant female that comes in with 8 puppies in her belly, whoever is the foster should be doing this. We get a lot of puppies in at shelters and rescues, so that's really important. So when you get a mama dog in, you should be doing that. You should also be taking the puppy and touching with any body part you can possibly touch. Get the puppy used to toes. Get the puppy used to having its ears touched. And at about 20 to 21 days, now their ears open. So now once their ears open, remember, they're born, they have no sight and no sense of hearing, but they do have a sense of smell. That's what they use. Now 10 to 13 days, their eyes open, and about 20 to 21, 22 days, their ears open. Now they can hear, and that's when they start to be able to hear, is not don't make, you know, crazy loud noises, but you definitely do want to make some noises to get the puppy used to different sights and sounds. And loud noises and, you know, shocks and zaps and blowing and all these different sounds, get them used to it. Lightning, thunder, the crack of lightning, the crash of thunder. Try to get them used to that so that the dogs are able to, as they grow, kind of assimilate that into their senses of, hey, I think that's okay. Those are the dogs who tend not to get fear issues with things they see or hear. So also bearing in mind, up-ear dogs, German Shepherds, Dobermans or Boxers that have had their ears done, Border Collie or Aussie or Australian Cattle Dog, Belgian Tervuren, any kind of a dog that has kind of up-open ears, they tend to be a little more sound-sensitive. So because their ears, like a rabbit ears, like would be something that would focus all the sound back into the ear canal and into the eardrum. So remembering that a hound or something that has the down floppy ears is probably going to be less likely to be super sound sensitive because their ear flaps are covering a little bit, kind of like if you had earmuffs on or if you have long hair that covers your ears. And I'll ask you to try something in the next segment because I really want, it's a really cool experiment, and I want you to all kind of understand why dogs do what they do. Because if you understand why they do what they do, you will never, ever have to question and say, gee, I wonder what I should do. If you understand the whys, then you can fix it. If you don't understand why something happens, you'll do it over and over again because you didn't realize it was a problem in the first place. So, in the next segment, we're going to go through a little experiment. So, if you can find a little washcloth, if you have a hat, like a, I call them a mugger hat, but like the hat that's a knit hat, or if you have long hair, well, I'm going to have you put your hair down. But try to get something to cover your ears. Come right back, and we'll be back in a moment.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. All right, I hope everybody went during the break and got either a hat or earmuffs or a scarf or has hair that you can put down, even you guys. And let's see this experiment, and you're gonna, this is gonna make you really think. Now, what I want you to do is put the hat on, covering your ears, so you can still hear me, but that you can, you know, your ears are covered. So if you have earmuffs or you have whatever in your ears. Now, I want you to listen to me. I'm gonna keep my voice exactly the same, and I'm gonna give you instructions, but I'm not changing the dynamics of my voice, so everything that you hear that's a difference is going to be the result of this experiment. So you're listening to me with your earmuffs or with your hair down or with a scarf over your ears. So what's happening is your ears are covered, but you can still hear. This simulates a down ear dog, a hound, one of the hunting breeds that the ears are floppy like an Irish Setter or a Springer Spaniel, Cocker Spaniel, Pointers, anything like that. Now, as you're listening to me, what I want you to do is lift your hat off or pick your hair up into a ponytail or take the scarf off and do it very suddenly. And I want you to listen to the silence. Isn't that silence loud? Do you hear how silence still has a noise to it? But when you have your hair down or a scarf on or earmuffs, it muffles the sound the same way that a dog who has down ears, right, would be having slightly more muffled. Now, we've all seen dogs with their ears flipping up when they're running. So as they're running or as their ear flips back and over, they're hearing more sound. That's kind of what happens, the difference between down-ear dogs and up-ear dogs. So up-ear dogs have more of a hearing, so they're able to actually listen to more and hear more from better distances, And that's why you can tell if a dog is a watchdog or a patrol dog. Not that a down-eared dog or a hound can't do that, but it is definitely a big difference of having your hair covering your ears or a hat covering your ears versus not having that. So what do you do when you have a dog who's sound sensitive? Well, let me tell you where that comes from. Sound sensitivity, if it is not coming directly from a product of the dog being deaf or having a degree of deafness, sound sensitivity does not come when they're very, very young from loud noises. It comes from their not having loud noises. So does that mean you want to be dancing around on the ceiling and banging and, you know, chopping wood and hitting the wall and knocking on the door when they're little? Well, I mean, don't go crazy with it. But I see the one problem everybody seems to do is, other than dog barking, if there's another dog in the house or in the kennel barking, most of the time it's very, very quiet where the puppies are. Some people raise puppies on a little puppy farm. I mean, you know, some people and different groups of people, you know, raise puppies, and it's very, very calm and quiet. And now this little puppy winds up being either in a shelter or being adopted. And, of course, the dog is, you know, not really used to loud noises. And now it hits from 12 weeks, you know, it hits basically a point where the sounds kind of don't matter now. The sight doesn't really matter. But also what happens is at 4 months is the fear impact phase kicks in. So the puppy, now that it can smell, see, and hear and do everything, now it kicks in where the dog is actually hearing or seeing more things, and it can become reactive because it's in a fear phase. So from the time puppies are 4 months, which is about 16 weeks, all the way up to and including 14 months, sometimes even 15 months, puppies are in flux. They're in and out of fear phases. They've already done their seniority classification, their dominance periods and things like that that are early on, and first flight instinct. So they're through a lot of behavioral phases, but the ones that seem to be most lasting are 4 to 8 months, and then there's an overlap. And the real problem I find is between 6 and 10 months. That seems to be when people can track when something happened to their dog, to their puppy, and that was, oh, my dog was fine until, well, Uncle Ronnie, you know, fell down right near, you know, next to him, and, you know, Aunt Susie, you know, she came over, and, you know, she's clumsy, and she dropped her umbrella, and it hit the puppy, but it was okay, because we picked the puppy up and petted it and told him it was okay, it was only Aunt Susie being clumsy, and then we start realizing, wait a minute, you're telling your dog it's okay to be afraid of Aunt Susie because she's clumsy. Your dog doesn't understand that it's Aunt Susie. Your dog understands there was something scary that hit him, or he saw, or he heard, whether it was a loud noise, something visual, or a smell. And because this dog, at that point, was rewarded by your petting it, because you didn't realize, because, of course, it's a dog, you didn't realize, though, that was going to be a problem. So what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The dog starts developing a behavioral issue. Fear, usually, because the dog is in and out of fear phases, fear impact, flight instinct, from 4 months to 14, 15 months of age. So what that means is if you get a dog who's in that up to 14, 15 months of age group, those dogs can be perfectly fine one day, and the next day they can be very, very different. So what would you do? Going back to the top of the hour, we were talking about the children getting bitten and youngsters being bitten in the face by a dog. If you get a dog and you haven't been able to teach it all that until it's about 16 weeks of age, that, hey, you don't bite faces, then you have to get a behaviorist, a real behaviorist, not somebody who's throwing a cookie or using a shock collar, but a legit behaviorist like United Canine Professionals. And we do, actually, today I had 3 calls that came into the switchboard. All calls free of charge on the 800 number that we have for United Canine Professionals, which is 855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, P-R-O-S. 855-4-CANINE-PROS. And three separate people called with issues that we were actually able to just tell them, okay, this is what happened, this is what you need to do, and we don't need to go to their house. So that's just three. We do that because if it is something that's a very simple issue to fix, we don't want to come out to you and have to have you hire somebody. We don't want you to have to get bad advice, so we're going to give you the correct advice. And sometimes we don't need to come out to someone's home. A lot of times, as a matter of fact. But I work with the best rescue in the world, besides the others, and I don't mean to offend all my other rescues, but everybody knows my favorite rescue is 11th Hour Rescue, which is based in New Jersey and has people all over the country. I got myself three separate phone calls, not the same ones, but three separate phone calls, and all three were for dogs that were displaying unusual behaviors. What was great about it is that all three of the people called before the behavior turned into something horrible, because they said, well, we got the number, and you, because you work with 11th Hour, you said that we can call and get free help. So they were much more likely to contact for help, and they did. They contacted me. So I was actually able to help them, and I don't think any of them will need help because I think they were relatively minor, but they could turn into something major. So don't wait until you have a big problem. If your dog growls at your three-year-old, you call us. That is not okay. So we're going to go into a little bit more, so please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And we're talking about how to prevent bites and issues with a dog by starting early on and making sure we can teach the dog and the human what's okay, what's not okay. Now, remember when we're talking about children getting bitten in the face or anybody getting bitten in the face, unless the dog lunges up at your face, you don't have an excuse for getting bitten in the face. I'm sorry. Bitten in the hand, yes, you have an excuse. Bitten in the leg, yes, you have an excuse. Bitten in the rear end, you have an excuse. Bitten in the toe, you have an excuse. Maybe bitten on the forearm, you have an excuse. But when you tell me that you got bitten by your Shih Tzu and you got bitten on the face, I'm sorry, but, you know, basically you did something that caused the dog to do that. Or why was the dog up near your face if you know it growled? Very, very rarely do we at UnitedCanineProfessionals.com ever get a phone call that says, I got the best dog in the world. Bye. Or, I've got the best dog in the world. He is just so perfect. I would love for you to just come see what a good dog is like. Can you come for dinner tonight? Well, he's a great dog. Just remember, but when you come over, just don't look at him because he'll jump on you. And when you're eating dinner, make sure you don't look over at him or he'll growl at you because he's going to want what's on your plate. He's the best dog in the world. No. I have the best dog in the world. I have 17, well, I have actually 25, but 17 in my house, the best dogs in the world. They are child-proof, they are cat-proof, they are adult-proof, they are stupid-proof. And I have lots of stupid-proof dogs. Now, does that mean that I'm going to let an unstable, you know, well, there's your Casey Butler, there's your stable toddler question. Do you think that even the best dog in the world should be left unattended with a child? Oh, heck no. Or as good friend Dawn says, hail to the no. Absolutely not, because even if the dog is okay with it, why are you allowing a dog and a child unattended? That's where the problem is. It's that we don't think. And a lot of times people just, like I said, just don't think. Would you ever leave a child 2 or 3 or 4 years old unattended by a swimming pool? Would you ever leave a child 3 or 4 years old or even 10 years old alone in a house? Gosh, I hope not. Because if you do, that means that you are relinquishing the control and relinquishing your ability to make sure that that child's okay. And that is not a good thing. You never want to leave a dog or a child alone, not even the best dog in the world, until you are absolutely positive that that dog is non-reactive. And, you know, even sometimes what happens, you have a dog, and there's a loud noise outside, so it's not even that the dog is doing something wrong or the child's doing something wrong, but suddenly in that moment, the noise can set something off. Now, you'll see that there's a pattern that follows when you have a dog. The pattern is something happens. It's a noise. It's whatever it is. Something happens. And when that something happens, and you now have a dog who hears something, let's say a doorbell, a phone ringing, something falling, a piece of food on the floor, a cookie, somebody's eating dinner, a dog is passing by. Whatever could possibly happen is happening. Now, let's say that happens, and because of that, all of a sudden, the dog doesn't think, obviously, oh, you didn't do that. The dog thinks, uh-oh, I heard something, and he reacts. Well, if he reacts, even though it's not the correct reaction, he's reacting. You can't say, oh, that's not right for the dog to react. That's like somebody being startled. Now, I don't get startled very easily. Now, I'm sure that I've been startled in my life, but it's rare, very rare. I will react. If somebody were to come up to me and try to like punch me, I would already have my fingertips into their eye and be ready to poke their eye out. And you don't mess with somebody who's startled. Now, with me, you know, I'm not a startler. I don't get startled. If I were a horse, I'd be one of those rock-solid horses that you could take anywhere. But you know people who, if you startle them, they'll either punch you or they'll do something very inappropriate or they'll curse or they'll cry or they'll jump. Well, dogs are like that too. There are dogs that are very gentle and very calm and very confident and aren't worried about things. And then there are those dogs who are much more reactive and who tend to take that and start having issues instead of like what, you know, I would be if I were a horse or a dog. I would be much more solid. So when somebody tries to startle me, and they go to, let's say somebody went to slap me or smack me or something, I would have already reacted, and I would be protecting myself. But if you take somebody who's got a hair trigger temper, and you do something like that, that person might punch you, lay you out. Or if you have somebody who's more of a startler who just gets shocked and cries, I've seen people get scared because they're startled of something, and they start crying. Or people start yelling at each other. Well, dogs have the same thing happen. So not every time that, you know, you think that a dog should react like you do, does it actually happen. That's where the problem happens, when you start startling an animal. And remember, it's not your perception of if it's a startle or not. It's not your idea that matters. It's the dog's idea. So if the dog is young, and the dog is reactive, and you startle it, whether you're putting your face near it or making some kind of silly noise or blowing into its face, or the phone rings or the doorbell knocks, when you have your face near that dog, you are going to potentially cause that or receive that energy that is going to come at you. That's why you always want to make sure that you teach the dog, especially with younger children, especially a shelter dog or rescue dog that you might not know the full history on, you want to make sure that that dog is, first of all, is stable with adults, and then second of all, very carefully supervising to make sure that if there is a problem, that you know how that dog is going to react. So, for instance, if you have a toddler around who has a lot of toys and you have a puppy or a dog who is a bit reactive to bones or toys or cookies or food or whatever, or items, well, get those things all picked up and let your toddler play quietly and calmly as much as you possibly can with a stable toddler, if you can find one, and then see how the dog behaves and claim everything of the babies and claim everything so the dog knows very simply, hey, that's not mine. This way, if the baby crawls or toddles or walks toward the dog has a choice of either to grin and bear it or the dog can walk away. Don't force the dog to be in the room with the toddler. If the dog wants to be away from the toddler, then let the dog be away from the toddler. But what you can't allow is for the toddler to back away because the dog growls. So if the dog is going to growl, that's not okay because nobody's going to growl at my child. They're not going to growl at me, and they're not going to growl at my dog or at my child because that's another member of the pack. So in the next segment, we're going to talk, and this is going to be our final segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about how you can baby-proof your dog. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, let the play. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, let the play. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Is your dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience Pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we have one final segment today, and we're going to talk about how do you baby-proof and child-proof your dog. Well, that's something that would take months for me to explain to you if I had to go through every single thing that a toddler could do. But what's really, really nice to know is that if you have a dog who's the best dog in the world, you still want to make sure that you run your dog through these little tests because you just don't know what you don't know. So if there's a problem and if you're not sure about, you know, what you should be doing, then this is what you're going to defer to. First thing is make sure you get your dog very, very comfortable with sounds and with quick movements. Now, when I walk in and I work with a dog, and dog who's had, you know, some kind of behavioral issues or something, first thing I do is I do it. You don't want to let the baby do those same movements. So try to look at the baby and think about, if I were a baby, what would I do? One of the things you want to do is make little noises. So if you have a baby coming home, you can actually get, and you don't even have to buy them, you can download them from the internet, baby sounds. Don't get the ones with the music that there's some person who's trying to make a lot of money on it. Just get the free ones off the internet. And what you want to do is play those baby noises and start with them pretty light. And then add the baby noises. So make them louder. And then if you have a, you know, a baby doll or something, carry around your Cabbage Patch Premier or your doll that kind of looks like a little baby and pretend that it's, you know, it's actually a baby. And you can even put your little iPod in your, you know, where you're holding the pretend baby so that the dog starts realizing, oh, they're baby sounds and you're holding it and it's okay. The problem doesn't happen. I mean, I rarely see dog bites on very, very tiny kids under about 8 months of age. Usually, probably the youngest I've ever seen is probably about 5 or 6 months. Because for the first 5 or 6 months, they're being held by mom or they're being held by dad. And the dog is basically watching you take care of this thing. And then the noises start changing. The baby starts getting a little bit louder and maybe making movements. Also, getting the dog used to the swings that the baby would be in. So, like one of my clients, they have one of those, they really rocking and rolling, one of those swings that goes back and forth and it clicks and goes click, 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 almost like a metronome. Those of you who don't know what a metronome is, if you're a musician, you'll know what it is. But it's like a quick pendulum that makes a click. And that click can be irritating to a dog. So get the dog used to the fact that there's going to be this thing moving. So put your fake baby doll with your little iPod noises and put that into the little swing. So you start getting the dog used to the fact that there are going to be noises coming out. It's going to be clicking. Put the little mobile there because a lot of dogs, especially the fun-loving dogs like the pits or the, you know, boxers and the setters and pointers and the sporting dogs and herding dogs, they'll see those little things spinning around or a kid playing with something and tossing it around, and the dog will think, oh, great, you're playing fetch. So make sure you get the dog used to that and do it slowly so that the dog becomes accustomed to it. The real problems typically don't start until the baby starts walking or crawling, because that's when the dog will start looking at that child as either a prey animal, that, I'm supposed to go chase that one and protect it, I'm supposed to nip at its heels, or it might look at the child as an interloper, that he or she is trying to steal something. And then, of course, wherever your dog's bed is, make sure you set a little boundary that if the dog, you know, sees the baby coming towards it, that the dog moves out of the baby's way. If you have a child who's toddling around unstable on its feet, which is what toddlers do, that's why they call them toddlers, you should not allow your toddler to toddle towards that dog, even the best dog in the world. Because if a toddler falls, they fall face first. They land right smack on the dog and face first, and the dog might be startled or he might be scared and he doesn't understand. And, of course, you know, that's what happens where the dog is suddenly, you know, basically a sitting duck. And either the dog can move out of the way, or if the dog can't move out of the way, then he doesn't move out of the way. The baby falls on him, and he decides, what are you doing falling on me? I'm in charge, because he thought he was a leader. And now you have a dog biting a baby. Whose fault was it? Is it the dog's fault, or is it the baby's fault? Neither. It's the parent's fault. You should not leave a dog and a child unattended until that child is, and I didn't say the dog, until that child is very well able to respect the dog's space and that the dog is equally well behaved, that the dog will not be, getting blamed for biting a baby. So there are a lot of wonderful things and wonderful ways that you can handle that, and you can change things. So, you know, it's just being smart. It's not putting a baby and a dog unattended, period, end. And if you as a parent didn't have that dog, that baby that was unattended could have fallen and cut his head open. He could have landed on the corner of something or on the fireplace or found a match or played with a lighter or, you know, opened a bottle of pills or landed face first in a bucket of ammonia. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know if that baby is going to be okay. So you really have to make sure that you think twice as as strong and twice as smart as you normally would when you have babies or little kids around. I do want to throw a quick shout out to the future Dr. Jody Joseph, to the amazing Casey Butler, and also to our amazing team at United Canine Professionals, because I really was so grateful to have everybody there and this whole time and for, you know, Thanksgiving and all. It's really wonderful to have an incredible group of people around me that challenges me and always has a the right things in mind. If you think that you might have what it takes to join our incredible team at UnitedK9Professionals.com, you can call us at 855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, 855-4-K9-PROS. If you would like to foster, even for short term or longer term, you'd like to foster a dog for Merlin's kids or learn therapeutic facilitation or behavioral intervention, cancer and disease detection, or any of the service dog trainings that we offer at United Canine Professionals and at Merlin's Kids, you can call that number or you can call 855-HI-WYATT, and we will be happy to explain to you what we do and how you might be able to do this professionally and help us to rescue more dogs from shelters and rescues, rehabilitate them, and then train them to become service dogs for children with autism and other special needs, as well as veterans with PTSD, legitimate service dogs, not dogs that somebody keeps for a week and puts a fake patch on, but really legit service dogs who are awesome. And then the other part of that is, yes, you can make a career out of doing something you love. That, there's nothing wrong with that. I hope that everybody out there, especially you younger people who are listening, will do what you love. Find what you love and do it. Don't do something because somebody else told you to do it, unless it's, you know, you're 8 years old and your mommy tells you to go to bed. Yes, you have to listen. But other than that, find what you love and you'll do that for a living, and you'll never work a day in your life because you will just love it so much it will feel like, why am I getting paid for this? I would do it for free. Well, it is almost time to go. I do want to tell you something. We all hear every, you know, every summer, make sure you don't leave the dog in the car. And I'm one of those people, too. You don't want to leave the dog in a car. Well, sometimes people don't think, well, if there's a dog, oh, my God, there's a dog in that car. Why? Well, first of all, what are you looking in the car for? But that's great. But there's a dog in that car, and all the windows are rolled up tight. Right. It's 32 degrees out. If we leave all the windows open, the dog will freeze. So, of course, I mean, think about it. If you live in California or Florida or Texas or a place that's very warm, obviously you're not going to keep your windows up in the winter because it's just as bad as in the summer. But if you're in a very cool climate, yes, leave the window cracked, but do not, I repeat, do not do something silly like leaving all your windows open because your dog's going to be really cold. So remember, the temperature matters. So use your brain. Think about why, because people who don't understand why you would keep windows up in the winter when it's freezing cold and 32 degrees and say, oh, my God, but the windows are up. They don't understand why. They're just saying, oh, the windows are up on the dog. Well, if it's cold, you don't have to worry, and especially at night, cold, 32 degrees, you don't have to worry about the dog, you know, burning up because he's obviously, it's cold out. Think about why. If you understand why, you can fix any problem in the world. But don't just do knee-jerk things and just think that, oh, well, the dog will be fine with the baby. He's a good dog. It's different. Use your sense of intelligence and what God gave you, and I can't wait to see everybody back here next Tuesday, same time on From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. Have a great week.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.